Do you like books? I mean, really, really like books? Then you're in the right place. Each week, your host, Sam Hankin, interviews the best of today's top-selling authors and the up-and-coming superstars of modern literature. This is The Avid Reader. Here is your host, Sam Hankin.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another edition of The Avid Reader. Today, our guests are Greer Hendricks and Sarah Pekkanen, authors of An Anonymous Girl, published in December by St. Martin's Press. Greer Hendricks, before she wrote these novels, was an editor at Simon & Schuster, and her writing has appeared in the New York Times, Allure, Publishers Weekly. Sarah has worked for Gannett covering Capitol Hill, has written for the Baltimore Sun, has written several best-selling novels, international novels. The first collaboration between these two was The Wife Between Us, which, as I was just telling them, has been selling off the shelves at my bookstore and everywhere else. It's a international bestseller, soon to be a major motion picture by Amblin Entertainment, for which I think they're writing the screenplay. And then An Anonymous Girl has already been optioned as well, I think, this time for a TV series. All in all, two very busy women and a great novelistic couple, if that's a word. And so anyway, An Anonymous Girl tells the story of Jessica Farris, who's a makeup artist and a poor one she's a good makeup artist, but she's poor, who gets herself into big trouble by lying her way into a supposed academic study conducted by Dr. Lydia Shields, who's a really complicated villain with a past that leads her to acts that are also complicated scenarios with more than a twist of deceit and perversion, if you will. Jessica's a big girl, though, and the crux of the book is her efforts, notwithstanding Dr. Shields and her husband's machinations, to save herself, her family, actually, and her integrity, if that's possible. So with that, welcome to both of you, and thank you so much for joining us today.
I want to thank you for having us. We're excited to be chatting with you.
Good.
Absolutely.
Thanks for...
So I know you've talked about this in many interviews because I've read them, but for our listeners, most of whom who have probably already read The Wife Between Us, why collaborate? I mean, you're both outstanding writers. What does the union gain us, and what are the synergies that you gain?
Well, Sarah, can I go first? This is Greer speaking. Okay. I mean, I think basically better together. That's our motto. I mean, I was a book editor for 20 years, and Sarah was one of my authors. She wrote 7 solo books. And when I left corporate publishing, in the back of my mind, I wanted to write, but I wasn't really telling many people. But Sarah and I had gotten really close. We had discovered we had many uncanny similarities. excuse me. We both were the exact same age. We're terrible cooks. We played field hockey in high school. We both had studied psychology and journalism. So we had developed this friendship, and somehow I just decided to reach out to her and tell her I was thinking about writing. And she said,
I said, let's write a book together. You know, as Greer mentioned, we were super close. We would have these long dinners every time I came to New York, and we would say, let's take off our editor-author hat, let's put on our friend's hat for this dinner, and we would be kicked out of restaurants after 3 hours and not realizing we had, you know, shut the place down and people wanted us to leave so they could go home because we just couldn't stop talking.
And we had a bottle of wine.
Well, yeah, it helps the creative process. But we both, I think, were kind of itching to try something a little different. Greer had edited a lot of best-selling authors, including several co-author pairs, like the authors who did The Nanny Diaries. And I had been writing mainly women's fiction, and we both were kind of secretly itching to write a psychological thriller. But I think we instinctively knew we wanted to write a super complicated, twisty novel, and we needed our combined brain power to actually pull it off well. And we knew we were great collaborators. We were very in tune editorially. We had the same narrative instincts. We liked the same kind of books. Now we are kind of like, we couldn't write without the other one now.
Huh.
We have our whole new process that we've kind of established that, you know, Greer can talk more about. But it's been great.
Well, the thing that, after that question being answered, the thing that I was intrigued by, and again, it was alluded to in one of the interviews, is that you don't write the books like some co-authors do, sequentially, chapter by chapter, or character by character, but you write them kind of together, page by page. I mean, each page, you both contribute to each page.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an unusual process. But basically, when we decided to collaborate, we really didn't think about how we were going to, the how of it all, how we were going to do it. Sarah lives right outside D.C. I live in Manhattan. But my daughter suggested Google Docs, which now I mean, most people do know what it is. But at the time, Sarah and I really had no idea. But what it does is it allows us to both be on our computers. Sarah's, you know, at home in D.C. and I'm in, you know, here in Manhattan. And we're looking at the same, you were looking at a screen, same time. We can see each other typing. And we're also on Google Hangouts, which allows us to talk through our computers. So we developed this process where we basically talk about each scene, where we want it to start, where we want it to end. We outline it in great detail, but we do write every line together. Yeah, it's sort of like this weird, almost like twin language. And most collaborators that we, you know, have heard about, they alternate chapters, or they'll each take on a character. But that's not the way that we do it, or will ever do it.
Yeah, the first time my daughter told me about Google Docs, I said, "But how do you save it? How do you save it?" She goes, "Dad, it auto saves. Don't worry." I said, "Yeah, but you got to save it."
We went through that too, where we did keep saving, even though we automatically saved. We were so nervous that we, you know, just
for
saving also.
Oh, so funny. So, going back to the characters then, did one of you actually come up with Jessica? Did one of you come up with Dr. Shields? Did one come up with Thomas? Or they couldn't both spring from your heads exactly at the same time?
Well, what we do is we talk through our plots for months in advance. And we come up with about 100 ideas every day. What if is one of our favorite expressions. We actually have T-shirts that I had made for us around the time of publication of The Wife Between Us, with all of our favorite catchphrases. And what if is one of the big ones, along with Better Together, of course. But we just talk and talk and talk and say, what about this? What if it was this character? So not only every line comes from our shared brain, but the plot. At some points, we look back in the book, we can't point to a line and say, oh yeah, you wrote this line. And actually, when we've tried to, when I've been like, Greer, that was such a good line you wrote, she'll go, wait a minute, didn't you write that one? And so it is really strange, the level of kind of, you know, closeness that we have in terms of writing these books. We joke that, you know, we have all these similarities. You know, we both have brothers named Robert, as Greer mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
But people now ask us if we're sisters when we meet. And another weird little tidbit is that, you know, we've heard about twins who have these things, like if one of them breaks a leg, the other might feel a sharp pain in their leg. And oddly enough, Greer and I have had a few things like that happen, where, you know, I had an allergic reaction and got hives on my arm, and her arm started to itch a few minutes later. And we can't attribute it to anything other than the fact that we're on the phone for 8 hours a day working. And
you know what? I mean, Sarah broke her toe, and then a couple weeks later, I broke my thumb. I mean, it's become really quite strange.
It's very strange.
It's like something out of one of our books, Sarah.
At least it's different appendages.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, okay, here's a question that might peeve you, so don't take offense. But there's 1,288 books with the word girl in the title. From Dragon Tattoo, Pearl Earring, Train, Gone, Girl Interrupted, Boleyn, Fell from the Sky, to name a few. So here's the thing. Why girl? And also, why girl when all of these people are women?
That's a fair question.
Yeah.
You want to take that one, too?
Yeah, I mean, we had the same thought. We thought, has girl been kind of overdone? And, you know, we actually, when we heard the title, An Anonymous Girl, something about that, that title was proposed to us because we have struggled a bit with titles. We loved it. We felt like it fit. you know, yes, Jessica is 28 years old. She, you know, is a woman, but something about that title just really seemed to fit.
Well, the word anonymous, we just thought was such a strong word. And I mean, it's interesting to hear that there are so many books with that, with girl in the title, but our feeling also is that while people in the industry are very aware of that word, I don't think consumers are particularly bothered by it, and the word anonymous is so powerful, so that's what we are going for.
Yeah, and I would also say that I would be more worried if the title had the word woman in it and the characters were not fully formed, complicated women. Ours, we feel, are, you know, they are relatable in some ways. Some of them maybe aren't, but our main character is a relatable, complicated, fully fleshed out woman. So I think to us, you know, nailing the character that way was, you know, the most important part.
It's funny, I interviewed Gillian Flynn before Gone Girl got famous, and then I interviewed the woman who wrote Girl on a Train. And I said, how many times in the past 6 weeks have you heard the word girl? And she just laughed because that was right after. And she felt that some people thought that she had kind of, you know, stolen it. But in any event, when I realized that Dr. Shields was being written in the second person, my first response in my mind was that this is being written as if it was a psychoanalytic study.
Mm.
Is that how you guys decided? Second person is so hard to write.
We wanted there to be a real immediacy to this book for readers to feel like they were participating in it in much the way that that Jessica is. So part of that was having the morality and ethics questions sprinkled throughout the book, so that, you know, we've been told that readers feel like they feel compelled to answer those questions as well. And then the second person, just we felt gave it this real, like, you know, kind of immediacy, and almost, you know, like you were being watched, just as Dr. Shields is watching Jessica. So it was definitely a very, very deliberate choice, and it was challenging to write for sure. In the beginning, to nail Dr. Shields' voice.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, we in fact tried from different points of view. We tried first, second person for Jessica, for Dr. Shields, until we figured out what would be the best way to do it. But yeah, we did want to kind of remove that little bit of a wall between the reader and have it be as though they, as Greer said, was, you know, they were participating in this. They were answering the questions. They were kind of living this along with Jessica.
It worked really well because being in the second person and almost sounding like she was dictating a note about a patient, it meshed well with the idea that, you know, she's not really immoral. She's amoral. She's almost sociopathic, and she doesn't even recognize.
Thank you.
You know, it's like in that Nicole Kidman movie, To Die For, or something like that. American Psycho or something. But yeah, I don't know. Would you call her sociopathic?
I think by the end of the book, she was, for sure. Yeah. It's funny you said Nicole Kidman, because when we try to picture our characters, that was one of the images we conjured. Like, we imagined her looking a bit like Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
See, if you can get her, you're going to get somebody, so... I mean, it's funny because your process and what we've been talking about sounds very cinematic. So I think it's, and you're going to be doing the screenwriting, it sounds like it's going to translate, or maybe it already is translating very well.
Thank you. I mean, I think when we were writing, we take a very cinematic approach to our novels, and so right now we actually are in the process of working on the screenplay, and it's been it's been really fun, and it does work with our collaboration. So we're having a good time with it.
Well, you guys...
We just got off a call with, people behind the movie version at Amblin of The Wife Between Us, and we're talking with them a bit about it. And E1, as you mentioned, has optioned an anonymous girl. This will be for a TV series.
Right.
But they've hired some writers that we really like. We've read their stuff, and they have a great take on it. So
yeah.
I think Greer and I are both very visual, and that, you know, obviously is what translates well to the screen. In fact, like, sometimes we'll have to remind each other a little bit to pull in the other senses, because we do sometimes even talk about a scene as we're writing it, and we'll say, let's see this scene. How does this look? How do you see it?
Well, you know, it's funny because you guys can't possibly agree on every single thing in your lives. So, like, say Thomas, for example, you know, Thomas is drawn very well because, you know, when Jessica goes to the wrong person and Dr. Shields says, no, it's not him. It's the one with, you know, I'm not going to go into too much of it. But, yeah, she directs her to him. And so you have to explain a lot how he looks. But do you think on all these characters you both have in your mind the same kind of, whether it's a Tom Cruise or whether it's, you know, Liam Hemsworth?
I think because we talk so much about the characters that one of us will say, you know, I'm imagining, you know, her like this or that. I mean, literally with Dr. Shields, we know her exact weight. We are like, she varies between 117 and 118. Like, we come up, we just talk and sort of brainstorm, and our characters, they do, their looks change, for sure. Thomas changed, you know, a bit. I thought Dr. Shields looked pretty much how she did from the start.
Yeah.
Right there. Yeah. We really had a vision of her.
But she's perfect.
She would thank you for that.
Yes, she would.
Yeah, but I think, too, I mean, we don't always start off with the exact same vision of maybe a character or a line, but we actually welcome that process. It's not a process where we're arguing. It's more like, okay, I see this. What do you think? You see that? Mm-hmm. Okay. And if one of us isn't happy, we agree it's not working. We've got to both be happy with it. And so that means going back to the what if and, you know, pulling up another 100 ideas and seeing what seems right. And when it kind of clicks, we both feel it.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because, and I don't know if you did this on purpose, but like we were just talking about, with Dr. Shields and Thomas, I have a pretty good idea in my head. Well, I know that Dr. Shields is beautiful. I know Thomas is very handsome. With regard to Jessica, I don't know. I know what her hair's like. But I don't know whether she's really pretty. Is she kind of pretty? It's hard to tell. And then I started thinking, well, are these three reliable narrators? Because I really only know how Dr. Shields looks like, what she looks like, from Jessica's point of view. So I started wondering, in the middle, when I wasn't sure about things, are these three guys, people, all telling me the truth? Did you try to do that?
I mean, definitely none of the characters are simple. So, I mean, I think for Jess, like, that wasn't really her currency, you know, how she looked. She was, you know, she's much older than her 28 years in some ways, and she's, you know, struggling to get by. She has a lot on her shoulders. And because she's in such a nutty situation, she also starts to question reality at times. So I think, you know, that I'm glad that you kind of, you know, picked up that unease and the kind of what's real, because she was feeling that too.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, I don't want to spoil anything, so I'll be very general about this. But, you know, they both Dr. Shields and Jessica have issues from the deep past, and they deal with them in completely different ways. Mm-hmm. And then the purgative thing that Jessica does, I think, is what gives her the strength to do what she does to kind of prevail. Because Dr. Shields does not address it in the same way at all.
No, they're like basically opposite ends of the spectrum.
But the phone call that Jessica makes to her parents, you know, it's like,
yeah,
that was really, I didn't expect it. That was really good, though. I mean, what a good thing to do.
thank you.
But it's funny because when you're thinking about a psychological thriller, you don't really think in terms of, you know, an academic study, three characters just basically kind of living their lives. What's the name of the guy who was the assistant? I just forgot his name.
Ben Quick.
Yeah. He was a good character too. He was only in and out, you know, a little bit, but especially when he walks out the door and she says, can you tell him? And she asks him that question and he says he can't say anything more. Then I thought, oh, I wonder if he knows anything that I should know about. where'd Ben come from, you know? That's what I'm curious about.
Where did the character come from?
Like, yeah, like, you know, when we keep talking about how close your collaboration is, and I don't mean to keep beating on it, but so one of you said, hey, let's put a guy in, or you couldn't both have said it exactly the same time. One of you had to come up with
it. It's so hard for us to retrace that.
I know, because I feel like so much of what we do just comes, again, out of this weird organic talking. I mean, I feel like we probably wanted a male voice in those early scenes, Sarah, right? I think maybe that's where he came from. But could I say, who thought to do that? I would never be able to pinpoint that the way that we came up with that.
Right. Even his name, yeah. I can't tell you. And that's, you know, like, I guess, you know, you're kind of tapping into the sort of memory and perception, which is more of a piece of the wife between us. But, you know, it would be like saying to you, okay, a week ago on Tuesday, you know, what did you do when you talked to somebody? You know, what did you say? It's, you know, when we are on the phone for 8 hours a day, our conversation is often very much in shorthand as well. Like, we will start in the middle of a thought, and, you know, or when one of us has the keyboard and is writing a line, the other one's like, yeah, that's right, you know, or, you know, this word. So it does probably have to do with the months of talking that go into the plot. And then as we're writing, we're constantly revising as well. So,
yeah, I guess it's an unfair question for me to ask, but I never really thought about it that way. You guys should write a novel about two authors who collaborate, but it turns out they're not really collaborating.
That's hilarious. Yeah. It would be a lot easier for us if somebody else was writing it. We could put our names on the cover, but...
Well, then have a ghostwriter of your collaboration.
Right. We're just the faces of the collaboration. Yeah, but we're also, and you know, in addition to our time on the phone and Google Docs and Google Hangout, we each will get up early or stay up late, and we'll go in and make edits in suggested mode into the document, and then we're constantly texting, emailing, like, I'll have listened to an interesting podcast, and I'll send the link to Sarah. She'll have read a really interesting article, and she'll tell me, you know, she'll email it to me. So we're just like constantly generating, percolating ideas. We have files for our future books, you know, just interesting, you know, things that we think will inform a character or a scene.
Yep. Here's a photo of this person I saw. What do you think? Yeah. Does she look like, you know?
Yes.
Oh, that's
like Jess, or does she look like, you know, Lizzie or whoever it is? So, so there's a lot of that. We also, one other piece of our process is that every month or so, we'd like it to be more often, but just time doesn't allow. We meet in Philly, halfway between our two cities, and we go to a hotel for 48 hours. And we literally wear exercise clothes, and we work through every meal. We might leave the hotel for one walk, you know, around the block, but we get a ton of writing done during those sessions.
What hotel do you go to?
The Hyatt, the Bellevue.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I love that hotel.
Yeah, it's a great place.
I've crashed a lot of weddings there. So I guess in conclusion, you got all this stuff that you're doing. By the way, when you got on tours, you both go everywhere, right? You don't split up, or do you?
99% of our tour will be together. There might be an occasional event that either, you know, one or other of us couldn't make, but we're pretty much on the road together.
Right. 15 cities this January, and we're actually looking forward to a lot of writing time together on planes and before events. So that's actually one of the best parts is, you know, tours can be a little bit lonely because you go out and you do your event and it's great and you talk to readers and then you're back alone in your hotel room eating dinner. But when Greer and I are together, we have a blast. We, you know, have more fun doing events together. We do have kind of a perfect relationship in many ways in that we don't argue. We're both pretty easygoing. We're both collaborators. We have different strengths, I think, that we both bring to the projects. But they kind of, it all works in harmony.
It sounds wonderful. It sounds like a marriage with no downside.
It's true. I know. I'm like, are we just in the honeymoon phase? I hope not. I think we picked the perfect partner. And we express also, this might sound really hokey, I might get choked up, but we express an immense amount of gratitude for each other, quite often, and gratitude for how successful the collaboration has been. Because, you know, I was a, you know, book editor for 20 years. I know how hard it is to, you know, to have a book break out. And so we're grateful for each other. We're grateful for our publisher. I mean, St. Martin's Press has done such a great job, and for our readers, and for, you know, people like you, smart readers too, who, you know, are spreading the word and ask such interesting questions. So
thanks. Well, the other good thing about it is apparently you can drink through this entire process as well.
Well, we took our cues from Hemingway, you know, we figured.
There was a lot of drinking in this book, too. Dr. Shields, everyone drank a little bit in this book, didn't they? Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, although, I don't know, Dr. Shields didn't drink too much.
Well, she had those glasses at the end. Oh, yeah, right. Oh, never mind.
Yeah, she had her glass of red wine. I thought there was more drinking in our first book, I would say.
Yeah, Dr. Shields would have, like, a really fine glass of red wine and a crystal glass and...
That matches her burgundy nail polish.
Yes.
Oh, and I remembered, the other good thing, I'm going to let you go, but the other good thing was the fact that she's left-handed, right? Dr. Shields is left-handed.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, so am I, so everything that she was saying about from scissors to irons and all that, yeah, I'm used to that. So that was funny, too, because I noticed things like that, which...
Mm. That was just another fun thing for us. We love research. I mean, we both... Yeah. You know, having journalism and psychology backgrounds, we love reading studies, you know, psychological studies, doing the research. Like, we'll dig into that a little bit on our own and then text each other. What about this article? What about this? So that's another fun piece.
Yeah.
It's a great collaboration. And, it's, you know, without the technology that exists now, it would be almost impossible to do. And it sounds like you've taken advantage of all of it. But, okay, well, thank you so much for being here. Like I said, you know, I own an independent bookstore, which is a labor of love, and your book's doing great there. And this book, which is based on when this airs, will be released 1 week ago, seems like it's going to do just as well, if not better. So thanks again for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
So we were talking with Sarah Pekkanen and Greer Hendricks, authors of first, The Wife Between Us, which, as I was saying to them, is selling out in our bookstore every day. We have to keep ordering it. And now this new one that just came out, An Anonymous Girl, is both of them. The first one, Wife Between Us, is optioned and will be a major motion picture, as they say, by Amblin Entertainment, which is, I guess, owned by Steven Spielberg. And then Anonymous Girl, even before its publication, has already been picked up as a TV series. They write really well together, and as you can see, they have a great relationship. And because of Google Docs, the technology that exists, the fact that they can talk while they're writing, really makes this kind of genre something that you can expect to see more and more often. Kind of like crowdsourcing exists now on the web for fan writing and stuff like that. In any event, we have coming up actually a couple books that are kind of like this one. Karen Thompson Walker, who's going to discuss her latest novel, which is called The Dreamers, and a woman, Sarah Selecki, who is a first-time author, and her novel, Radiant Shimmering Light, is fantastic. And it deals a lot with how our lives are manipulated, are occupied, and are filled with things that have nothing to do with us personally, but only with us virtually, because of the technology, because of Facebook, because of Instagram, because of Twitter. Okay, and so for a complete schedule, you can always visit us at our website, or you can download any of our podcasts at iTunes. And so anyway, I look forward to having you back here next week on The Avid Reader.